You have a heart, whether you want one or not. In biblical language, that's the center of who you are. You have a will, you have desires, you have things that you want. And you can turn your heart, you can focus your attention, you can focus your energies, you can be thinking about something. We all do this inevitably. It's not a question of if I'll do it, it's where will I turn my heart. And in particular today, in this Advent season, as we journey in the book of Luke, as we think about a life where I'm connected from one moment to the next with God, with a loving Father who is greater than me, where do I need to turn my heart to prepare myself to God? So, stay tuned. This is the first chapter of Luke, beginning with verse 5. Luke says, in the time of Herod, king of Judea. Now, this is not just a chronological reference. Luke is setting up kind of a tension here. In the ancient world, you would expect if there was a king like Herod, he's going to be the hero of the story. Herod's not going to be the hero of this story. His heart is directed someplace, but it's not in a way that's going to prepare him for God. It's towards power. He built magnificent stuff. He called himself Herod the Great. But he had real problem with the people in his life. He had 11 or 12 wives. Historians aren't sure which. The one that he loved the most, he ended up killing because he thought she was plotting against him. Killed his favorite son. When he was dying, he thought another son was plotting to grab the throne, so he killed him. Herod's a different kind of king. His heart's oriented in a different kind of way. That's not who God can work with. In the time of Herod, king of Judea, there was a priest named Zechariah who belonged to the priestly division of Abijah. His wife Elizabeth was also a descendant of Aaron, both of them in the priestly line, so high status people. Both of them were righteous in the sight of God, observing all the Lord's commands and decrees blamelessly. Now you might think that would purchase them a wonderful life, but they were childless because Elizabeth was unable to conceive, and both were very old. So in that world, being infertile carried a great stigma with it. People would often think God was punishing them. So although their spiritual lives were exemplary and they were both from priestly status, their status would have been real low. And they were old, so they weren't going to have a kid. I have a good friend who was telling me, a little child said to him, "You look different today." And he thought, well, this is going to be interesting. And then the kid said, "You look like an old man." And the reason is, he is an old man. So disappointment is a place to take a look at what's going on in my heart. Once when Zechariah's division was on duty and he was serving as priest before God, he was chosen by lot according to the custom of the priesthood to go into the temple of the Lord and burn incense. Now, there were about 18,000 priests in Zechariah's day. And so to be able to enter into the holy place of the temple and offer incense was the honor of a lifetime. You were only eligible to do it once, and this is his day. He's won the lottery, so this is a big deal. The temple is a real important setting in the beginning of Luke, the stories that we're looking at. The temple, of course, was the house of God in the ancient world. For Israel, it was the place where God came to dwell with people. 40% of these first couple of chapters of Luke take place in the temple. The very beginning right here, and then the end when Jesus is 12 years old, the temple bookends it. We're learning how to connect with God, how to live in God's presence. The temple pointed to it. Jesus is it. So Elijah's in there. When the time for the burning of incense came, all the assembled worshipers were praying outside. Very dramatic moment. Then, while Zechariah is in the holy place, in the place that expressed God's presence, an angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing at the right side of the altar of incense. When Zechariah saw him, he was startled and was gripped with fear. But the angel said to him, "Do not be afraid, Zechariah." Maybe that's God's word to you today. "Your prayer has been heard. Your wife Elizabeth will bear you a son, and you are to call him John. He will be a joy and delight to you, and many will rejoice because of his birth." Great joy is coming in this story, although, as you might remember, John will be executed by the state as an enemy. Joy and sorrow mixed together in this story. "He will be great in the sight of the Lord. He is never to take wine or other fermented drink. He will be filled with the Holy Spirit even before he is born." And then here we go. He will bring back or turn, a word comes up numerous times. He will turn many of the people of Israel to the Lord their God. And he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to turn that also, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. In other words, the way that he will get people prepared, ready for the Lord is by turning their hearts to other people, particularly the people who are closest to them, particularly to families where there can be such great pain. And this is a fulfillment of the absolute end of the Old Testament, Malachi chapter 4, verses 5 and 6, I think. Where God promises he will send another Elijah who will turn the hearts of the fathers towards their children and of the children towards their parents. So, the invitation today, if you want to live in connection with God, is to live in connection with other people by turning your heart, your thoughts, your desires, your attention, your energies, your hopes, your will for the good to other people, especially the people closest to you. And of course, the irony of this is we're in the holiday season, and the holiday season are the times when families are often most filled with tension and friction and difficulty. And what am I going to do with this person? And what am I going to say to that person? And there was an article in USA Today, 88% of families associate Thanksgiving with family tension, friction, and conflict. There's another article. It's been in numerous media. This particular holiday season, this kind of stuff always happens around this time of year, about a woman who is having her family over for the holidays. I think this was for Thanksgiving. And her sister said that she wanted to bring some order this year. So the woman thought, well, that would be good. She probably wants to figure out who's going to bring what dish or who's going to clean up afterwards. But no. Her sister wrote a code of conduct and brought copies for everybody in the family to sign and promise to abide by. Now, I'm not making this up, so I'm going to read this. It involved, for example, a rule against overlapping conversations. Our family can't handle this. So people were invited to take turns like a respectful debate club. I have people in my family for whom interrupting is a love language. That would not fly. This is a code of conduct. Now, our family, our hearts are not turned towards one another. Another one was a ban on controversial topics, and she, the sister, would be the arbiter of what counted as a banned topic. Another rule was a dress code of smart casual. Holding photos, she said, should reflect well on our family. I have people in my family who will run at the sight of any attempt of taking a picture. Assigned seating will happen, she said, according to optimal personality compatibility. So you think about Jesus and his disciples. Matthew, you're a tax collector. You work with the Roman government. You sit at that end. Simon, you're a zealot. You're trying to overthrow the Roman government. You sit at that end. These were not optimal seating capabilities, compatibilities. Anyway, this was like, you know, our family's own private Leviticus, and it became the source of so much conflict that the woman that was the host decided, I'm going to disinvite my sister. And then the mom said, no, you ought to humor her. And then the brother said, no, I'm not going to any place where they try to devise another constitution just for our family. And it ended up destroying the family's potential to be together. And so often that happens in holidays. Now, the invitation for you today is think about the people in your family, maybe including somebody that's hard for you, and ask God, would you turn my heart towards that person? How could I look at them differently and see what you see, somebody that you made, somebody that you love? Not try to distort, not try to placate, but to genuinely will the good for this person. I'm telling you, gang, the pain in families is so immense in our day. There's a researcher, a sociologist at Cornell University, who is studying estrangement in families. Found that 27% of folks in families in the United States are estranged from another family member. 10% of parents are cut off from a child or children cut off from a parent. He says estrangement is the epidemic that is growing in our midst, but it's the problem that's hiding in plain sight. And I don't know what that looks like for you. I know sometimes estrangement has to happen. And maybe a person feels like, I just can't remain healthy in any other way. Maybe it's not in your choice. But I do know the way, according to Luke, according to the story of the coming of Jesus, the way that we're told that people will be prepared, will be made ready for the coming of God, to relate to God, is to have our hearts turned towards the people in our lives. And of course, that's exactly what Jesus said, love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. And that starts at home. So today, just think of the people in your life and ask God, would you turn my heart toward those people? Would you help me look beyond the flaws and the foibles and the maybe very, very deep hurts? I don't know what that means in terms of next actions, but would you turn my heart so that I have compassion and empathy and love for them? Would you help me to know, how might I serve them? Okay, I was with a family member yesterday, and Fritos is one of the great joys of their life. So just creating Fritos, finding a way to get them some Fritos. Find something that will bring that person joy. Seek to be honest with that person. If it's possible to have a conversation that might be able to reconcile the problem, for God's sake, have that conversation. Be a servant. Whatever it looks like, and God will guide you. That's part of what it means to be connected with God. God, now I'm looking for your kingdom in this relationship, in the face of this other person, in the way that I think about it. And God, guard my mouth. Oh God, help my mouth not to say stupid things that my heart will regret. Today, if you want to connect with God, turn your heart toward the people in your life.
Hey, thanks for joining us. My name is Tim, and I'm a part of the team here at Become New. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future videos from John. And you might like to know that John has hundreds more videos just like this one at our website, becomenew.com. You can go to the library there and browse and find something that might speak to you right now. You can also sign up for the email that goes along with each video there, or to receive a text alert whenever a new video is released. We wanted to let you know too that John's releasing a new book this February titled Steps, and we're really excited about it. You can pre-order that book at Amazon if you're interested, or if you want to just find out more information, you can do that at becomenew.com/steps. If you've got a prayer request, there's a group of us that meet each weekday, Monday through Friday, to pray for viewers just like yourself. You can send us that text request at 855-888-0444 or at our email, connect@becomenew.com. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.